welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. How you doing?
Good. You've chosen a good poem this month. It touches on a topic that I think all of us have dealt with, which is urinary incontinence. It comes from the Annals of Internal Medicine. I'll give the page numbers in a minute. But in the field of women's health, urinary incontinence, which is the involuntary leakage of urine, is common and undertreated. Estimates are that maybe half of adult women experience urinary incontinence, and most of them do not seek help, perhaps because they're ashamed, or perhaps they lack the knowledge that there's anything that we can do about it, or if they do have some knowledge, perhaps they're fearful of surgery. But whatever the case, it is definitely undertreated. Urinary incontinence, while it's inconvenient, can have some significant effects on health. It's not associated, to my knowledge, with premature mortality, but it can affect the quality of life, it can affect sexual dysfunction, it can affect morbidity in a variety of ways, including perineal infections. Falls are reported to be twice as common amongst women with urinary incontinence as compared to those without. We know there are a number of risk factors. None of these are going to shock listeners, but age, increasing age, obesity, increasing parity, mode of delivery. So compared with women who have had cesarean sections, women who have had vaginal deliveries are at a higher risk of urinary incontinence. Family history seems to play some role here. And I hate to say this, but it seems that smoking is also associated. I think that we can always say that smoking is associated with everything bad. But there seems to be some relationship between smoking and urinary incontinence. So this is a common condition. I said 50% of women perhaps are affected by it. The question is, should we be screening for this? And so the abstract and poem that you've identified comes from the Annals of Internal Medicine 2018. It starts on page 320, and it attempts to answer that question. Should women be screened for symptoms of urinary incontinence? Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we need to give some context here, Mike. So this is a guideline from the Women's Preventive Services Initiative. And that was something that was funded by a five-year grant by HRSA and the Health and Human Services to the American College of OB-GYN. And I think it grew out of dissatisfaction with the USPSTF recommendations that they felt were too conservative and too looking too closely at the evidence, if you will. And listeners may know I used to serve on the USPSTF, so I have my own inherent biases in terms of that process, which I think is a very good one and has been held up by the IOM as a model for guideline development. So they also wanted to address some issues like screening for urinary incontinence that were not being addressed by the task force. So this is the evidence summary in support of the guideline, and so we'll talk about that a little bit. Basically, and there are also other specialty societies that are in an advisory role, ACP and AAFP both. And so as the guideline author Alan Shaughnessy, or as the poem author Alan Shaughnessy writes, seeming to step on the sensible shoes of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, the stated goal of this group is to assure that women receive a comprehensive set of preventive services that are paid for by the government. So you can learn more about it by going to womenspreventivehealth.org. So, bit of a conflict of interest. The authors of this review found no studies that evaluated the effectiveness of screening on improving symptoms, quality of life, or function. So there were no studies that met their inclusion criteria for the question of, is there any direct evidence that screening women versus not screening them improves any outcomes? There's no research into the adverse effects of screening or the potential harms. Sometimes screening can cause labeling. It can lead to interventions that maybe wouldn't have otherwise occurred. Basically, the strength of the evidence to support treatments for incontinence is actually fairly low to moderate. And there's no evidence that earlier detection results in better outcomes than waiting till women report symptoms. And that's really what we do screening for, is to try to identify people, by definition, who don't have symptoms or are having unrecognized symptoms. So the group has decided, after reviewing all that evidence, that clinicians should use a validated assessment instrument annually So every year for all women to determine if they have incontinence and whether it affects their health, function, or quality of life. So bottom line, this is an evidence-free zone. The goal of screening is to identify a disorder before it becomes symptomatic. If early treatment has the potential to provide greater benefit than waiting until symptoms are reported by the patient. This really doesn't meet that definition. And so I think we have to look carefully at these guidelines that come out and really question their motivations and also their inherent intellectual and financial conflicts of interest of ACOG in encouraging women to seek care from a gynecologist. I just really question this. So I think this is more of a warning than an alert in terms of this new guideline that you may hear about.
Yeah. So I've got a couple of questions. First, I assume by screening, it's just asking, right? They're not asking any interventions or urometric studies. It's just asking women if they have these problems.
Well, there are some validated screening tools, and I looked at the evidence summary, and they are all over the map. There are about a dozen of these different tools. They take, you know, several minutes to 10 minutes to ask the question, so that's an opportunity cost, if you will. And they vary in accuracy. Only a couple of them were more than 70% sensitive and specific, so there'll be a lot of mislabeling of patients. A lot of false positives, particularly when you have a relatively low prevalence in, you know, young, healthy women. I think the prevalence of urinary incontinence is relatively low. I couldn't tell you an exact percentage, but whenever you have something at the lower end of the prevalence scale, a not very good test is going to end up with a lot of false positives and false negatives. And so, this is very problematic. I mean, it takes time. It takes time away from other things. We do know we should be counseling and screening women for depression and intimate partner violence and alcoholism. And if we instead are focusing on this, it has the potential to take away time from things that we do know are likely to be effective.
Yeah, I just wonder if perhaps I'm just being naive, but as a part of my review of systems, I often ask if there's been any problem with urine leakage. And if there is a stigma or an embarrassment to bring it up on their own, perhaps that's, that's an entree for them to mention it. But there's a lot of things we could ask about. But, you know, we have very little time with patients, and they have, come in relatively infrequently. And so we have to prioritize.
No, I think you make a very good point in terms of it being potentially a stigmatized or unfairly stigmatized condition. I think if the task force had looked at this, and I don't think they have, I don't recall this, but it would probably be an I recommendation, just insufficient evidence. We just don't know. And that leaves it to the individual clinician in their knowing their practice, knowing their community, knowing their patients to decide how they want to approach this. Insufficient doesn't mean don't do it. It just means that we don't know. And to make an affirmative recommendation that everyone all of a sudden should be doing this and the government should be paying for it seems inconsistent with the evidence.
Yeah. We'll take that I recommendation and process it. Thanks so much. And we'll talk with you again next week.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.